Hello and welcome to the official podcast of Palate Exposure, featuring Ilona Thompson, a podcast for those seeking the ultimate in wine, food, and travel. Each week, she interviews winemakers, chefs, celebrities, and a variety of guests that shape the way we enjoy life.
And her eyes get about as big as her head, and she goes, she is like meaning Santa Claus. She's like, any connection to the winery? I said, well, I'm the winer, I'm the winemaker and the owner. She goes, oh my gosh, she was giving me hugs. She felt like she just met Nirvana. And that was a funny experience. So our name is getting replicated, you know, all over the country right now. We're in 50 states and we're in about 15 countries now, but we just signed a deal to be in another 20 countries or so. So we're slowly creating the ripple to really put Paso on the map in our wines, not just in America or North America, but the rest of the world. I'll tell you another story. So I go to Nantucket every year, and I love going to Nantucket. It's a great show. We get invited to pour wines every year. And 2 years ago, we stay at this hotel called the Wawinette, and there's a shuttle that runs back and forth downtown, so they can drop you off for dinner. You know, they bring guests back and forth. So we're coming back from dinner, and you know, I had two people who worked for me in the shuttle. I'm sitting in the passenger seat, and then there are other guests from the hotel sitting there. So the driver starts making conversation with the whole shuttle, saying, oh, where'd you guys go out to dinner? So Stephen Klein, who works for us and handles the East Coast, who's riding the back, says, oh, we went to such and such restaurant. And the guy says, oh, they have a great wine list. So Stephen looks at him and says, oh, you like wine? The guy says, oh, I love wine. I collect wine. I drink wine every day. So Stephen says, well, what kind of wine do you like? He goes, reds mostly. He goes, anyone in particular? He goes, well, I like many, but probably my favorite lately, it's an amazing wine, is that wine that I don't know if you've heard of, it's called Dow. And I'm sitting in the passenger seat, like 2 feet from him. And Stephen says, oh, it is. The guy says, yeah. And Stephen starts smiling. He goes, tell me about that Dow wine. The guy literally looks at him in the mirror and he says, oh, I can tell you all about the Dow brothers. So Stephen looks at him and says, well, why don't you say hi to him? He's sitting right next to you. The guy got the shock of his life. So that's kind of how our brand is getting to be known. I think that slowly but surely, the big wave we've created in California is creating ripples that are basically reverberating, not just, you know, in America, but even all over the world. A lot of people are contacting us. They've heard of our wines, and they're enjoying them. And, you know, like I said earlier, our best message is always going to be in the bottle.
Absolutely. And as big of a rock star you are, you absolutely are, people, as you described, they're starstruck. They're so incredibly grateful for value created. That's why they love the wine. But also, there's an emotional element to it, right? When you meet somebody who's behind one of your favorite things. So, and yet, again, going back to when you started really elevating the brand of the region, it wasn't about that. It wasn't about you becoming someone. It was really much more communal than that. That's why you mentioned the Paso Robles Cap Collective, a very important organization, actually.
Absolutely.
That you founded. Talk a little bit about that, what was behind that thought process. And
so when we started the winery and we started getting our first reviews, you know, and comments and critics from, you know, notes, etc., I knew we were onto something very special. You know, a high tide floats all boats. As I mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. one winery cannot make a region. Yeah. It doesn't. And for me, my first thought when we started actually having confirmation that we were onto something special, my first thought wasn't even about me or the winery. My first thought is, I want to share this with the rest of Paso. I want Paso to actually be successful. And my goal and my vision early on was that, you know, many wineries, hopefully 30 or more, can get these high ratings, can get these great reviews, because the mass will really give us the respect. And at the end of the day, I'm also a business person, it's going to drive the consumer, right? If 30 wineries are making, you know, a great Cabernet, it's going to drive consumers and masses, and everybody will win. And that's really, you know, I was there to promote Paso first, no doubt. So I went to about 7 different wineries mm-hmm. that I felt had the potential to do that. I had meetings with them. I described to them the vision. At first, they said they were interested, but you know, time was running out, and I had a hard time getting a confirmation or a final decision. So I contacted my attorney. I had her create a non-for-profit organization. I had her create the bylaws, and I asked for one more meeting with those seven wineries, and I came in with a contract, and I said, here's a copy of all of them. It's time to really do it or not. So if you're gonna do it, I expect this sign and a check from you so we can get started. And everybody, but I think one or two wineries jumped in. They said we're in, they wrote me a check, we started the organization, then we hired a PR firm, and then we were off to the races. And that's how the PRCC got started. Now, you know, 3 years into the PRCC, I wanted to make sure that people understand that this is not about Dow. This is not about Daniel Dow. Mm-hmm. So I actually resigned. I got off the board. Mm. We appointed a person here to be on the board because we have a chance to do that with our board, with our bylaws. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm done with the PRCC because I don't want this to be about me. I want this to be about other wineries having the chance to really drive the organization forward, because if truly this organization is going to succeed, it can't depend on one person. So I removed myself totally, and I said, run with it. And you know what? They've done a great job. It's been 3 years. I haven't been involved. And the organization is accomplishing great strides.
Unsurprising that you started something that's running like a dream, because you put the right values in place, and clearly your success has in fact motivated and inspired people. Let's talk about your brand as it is today. There's been a couple of exciting developments that I read about. Fred Dane became a brand ambassador, right? What is his official title?
So yeah, he's a global, global brand ambassador for Dow. Fred is an amazing individual. He's super talented. He's got passion. And, you know, he has had this passion for wine all his life. So, and he's very respected. So, you know, first time I met Fred was about, I would say, 9 years ago or so. And he was asked to come by and visit us. And typical style of Fred Dame, you know, he's a very busy guy. He walks in here, he's like, folks, I've only got half hour, I don't have more time, so lay it down to me, you know, tell me about your winery, tell me about your wines. That was around noon, okay? He said, I only got about half hour. So 8:30, we're still together, mm-hmm. we're having dinner, drinking wine at Thomas Hill Organics in Paso, and Fred gave us the biggest compliment. He looked at George and I and said, I gotta tell you folks, I haven't been that excited about Cabernet Sauvignon in at least 10 years.
Wow.
So the friendship was formed back then. Mm-hmm. The bond was formed back then. Fred became a huge supporter of our wines. And when he left Southern Wine Spirits, he was recruited by three top wineries, two of them in Napa. Mm-hmm. And they were willing to, and I can't mention the name, but they're very famous. Mm-hmm. And they were willing to do anything to get him on board. But Fred came to George and I and said, I'll come work for you.
My goodness.
And I said, Fred, why? He said, because I couldn't think of a better way to finish my career than working with the Dow Brothers.
Wow.
And that to me is, again, a testament of what my brother and I have done. You know, we want to be real. We want to be loving. We want to be accepting. We want really to give people a chance to be happy where they work. And Fred saw all that. Of course, he believed in the wines, which is a big plus for Fred. And he's now traveling all the time, going all over the world, doing dinners for us, and promoting our wine because he believes in them.
Oh, fantastic. First, a question, but how many wines do you make?
So we have four lines of wines. Let's talk about them.
Okay.
So the first line of wine is called Patrimony.
Yes.
This is now a very, very small production. However, we're in the process of building a Patrimony winery. And it's never going to be a big production. It's probably going to taper out a few thousand cases in the future. But that's our highest rated wine. So,
an homage to your dad, isn't it?
So actually, Patrimony is how George and I want to see our legacy in the future.
Ah.
As a matter of fact, I just finished designing a custom bottle for the wine. And it's got an angel face, which is on our label.
Mm.
And in Latin, it's embossed in the glass, Legatum Nostrum, our legacy.
Beautiful.
So that's really for George and I's legacy. Hopefully many years from now, people will drink this wine and realize that we created this wine to be hopefully our legacy. Now, so that's our highest end wine. You know, it retails anywhere from, well, around $275 to $1,000 a bottle. We do have a $1,000 bottle coming out, or maybe more, we'll see, but it's going to be amazing. Clearly, it's a very small production, it's a few hundred cases, so it's not big right now.
So a $1,000 bottle would be a composition of top?
Cab. It's 100% cab.
Okay, and composition of top barrels that you chose, what would make up that blend?
So it's top barrels, exactly. So we have, we use about three or four barrels with this program. One of them I created myself. So, which is
you've created a barrel.
Yeah, we've created
physically,
a barrel.
Physically, it's custom made by
custom made. I mean, it's 5-year barrel. It's aged for 5 years out of the elements, and it's a special toast that I created. And it's Bois Rosé, so it's a special oak wood that is actually pink looking. So it's got very, very nice flavors. It's very rare. So we make a barrel that we use for Patrimony and Soul of a Line. I've been making that since 2015, I think.
Wait, pink oak, not white oak, pink oak. Where's the problem?
Well, when you go to a harvest of French oak trees in France, you'll see some of the trees are pink. And the first time I found that out was about 10 years ago or so. My good friends, the Canadelle, who owned the largest mill in France, I was staying at their house and went in the back, looked at the trees. I said, why are those pink? They go, those are very rare, doesn't happen often, but they really, really have incredible flavor. I go, what do you do with them? They go, we just blend them in. I mean, it's just like one tree out of maybe 100. It's like that. Yeah. I say, go ahead and start getting these trees and age them for 5 years, which is very rare. So the reason I age for 5 years is I want really a lot of flavors and I don't want tannins. So the longer you age it, the lower the tannins, the more flavors you have. So I use that. I use a barrel called T5, which is also another 5-year barrel from Tarançon, a very rare barrel. And I use a barrel called Sylvain Collection, which they only make about 40 barrels a year. It's from very old trees that fall because of a storm, or so it's very special trees, so I get those. So these are the three barrels predominantly that I use for the Patrimony. So, you know, depending on what tastes better, I will select a couple barrels from a couple lots, because usually about three lots or so. And I'll select the best ones, and that goes into our Black Label series, which is $1,000 a bottle. And it's truly, you can tell the difference, it's that good. And then we have our Patrimony Cab, which is really an amazing wine. It's gotten 96 to 100 rating every year since we released it, which the first release was 2013. So we're on now to 2018. And that's a wine that everybody has agreed, every critic has agreed, it's rivaling the best in the world, be it Bordeaux or Cab or Napa. So very proud of that. And so the winery should start construction in about a year and a half or two. And it'll be focused on, two varieties, Cab and Cab Franc. That's it. So that's our first line, that's highest end line. Then we have our, in the Dow line, we have our estate lines, the Dow estate lines. Mm-hmm. These are wines that grow from the estate. So we have right now about four vineyards in Adelaide, my house, my brother's house, another vineyard that we just purchased about a mile away, and the Dow Mountain, and they're all very close to each other. And all the estate wines, typically get sold in the tasting room. So they go mostly DTC, tasting room. With the exception of Soul of a Line, which we do sell to great establishments wholesale. So that's our estate lines. Then we have our reserve line, which is never sold in the winery. It's always sold wholesale. So it's two wines right now, our reserve Chardonnay and reserve Cabernet. And these are amazing wine that over-deliver for the price. These are wines that, sell for about $40 to $45 in the market. And they drink like a $200 bottle of wine from somewhere else. And they're that good. And we sell out every year from these wines. Then we have what's called a discovery line. Discovery lines tend to be in the $20 to $25 range. So we have a Sauvignon Blanc, we have a Chardonnay, we have a Cab, which is what we're really known for. And we also make a wine called the Pessimist, which is it's totally different style than Dow, which is why we call it Pessimist. We don't want it to be associated with Dow, because it's more of a fruit-forward, other varieties that grow great in Paso, Petite Syrah, Syrah, Zinfandel, Tanac, the grain, so non-Cab, non-Bordeaux. And that wine is doing really well for us. It's a beautiful wine, especially for the price too. So that's really where our, I have five levels of declassification. So based on the quality, I will declassify a wine, and I will not break that rule. And it's based on phenolics, that's based on my palate. So the reason that's important for us is we want people to know when they buy, for instance, a Soul of a Line, it's always going to be that quality. So some years we'll make 500 cases, some years we'll make 2,500 cases. It depends on the year. It depends on what Mother Nature gave us, and we don't compromise that.
Wow, quite an empire you've built, and I know there's some little bit of expansion that's going to happen in the high-end line, right?
Yes.
And That's very, very exciting. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I know you're a foodie. I see pictures on Instagram all the time.
Unfortunately, too much of a foodie, maybe.
But that's why you hike, right?
Yes, exactly.
So it's all symbiotic. So favorite things to eat, meal highlights, anything that really stood out? Because I know you travel a lot.
You know, I love food, and I love all kind of foods. I love Italian pasta with truffle. I love a good sauerkraut. I love great Asian food. Like this, I went to this restaurant in Vegas called Mod 32. Mm-hmm. Best Chinese food I've ever had. It was amazing. I can't wait to go back and just eat there. So I'm a foodie. But you know, at the end of the day, I'm going to tell you my favorite food. And it comes from my grandmother, who is actually, she only knew how to cook one thing. And she, you know, she has her origins from France. And she only had to cook one thing. She was a terrible cook. My mom was an awesome cook. But my grandmother, her mom, was an incredible cook. But she only knew how to do one thing. You know what it is? Steak frites.
What is that?
Steak and fries.
Steak frites.
So,
okay.
I mean, so my favorite food, like if I have to have one last meal, I would have a heck of a prime filet mignon or ribeye with great French fries, preferably made with olive oil, because I like olive oil when they're made with olive oil better, and a great bottle of wine. And you know what? That's my best meal, because I never get tired of it. I could eat it every day, and I cannot get tired of it.
So speaking of wine, besides your own, which clearly is hard to turn away from, but as much as you travel, has there been any highlights, especially recently perhaps, of some bottles that completely rearranged your mind?
I love Burgundy. I love Pinot. I make two Pinots right now from two famous vineyards, one from Solomon Hills down in Santa Maria Valley, and one from Gary's Vineyard up in Santa Lucia. Mm-hmm. Lucia. So I love Pinot. So when I'm not drinking my wines, you're pretty much going to catch me drinking a great Burgundy or great Pinot. When I'm in France, it's mostly Burgundy that I drink. I find that France has an incredible terroir for Burgundy. And I just love a classy Pinot. So if I'm not drinking my wines, that's pretty much what I'm drinking normally.
That's great. Any favorite producers? Or?
Many. Where do I start? Daniel Boccone, Jaillet,
of course.
Louis Latour, Faiblet.
Of course. Yeah.
All the top ones, obviously.
All the good
beautiful ones.
Yes.
So I like these wines, but I love a good rosé also. When I'm in south of France every year, pretty much every year, I go back and I love them in Hutt. I find it to be so fine, so refined, so smooth and elegant. Domaine Art is always going to be probably my favorite rosé from Provence.
Good to know.
So in Italy, I love actually a winery that most people have never heard of, and I think is actually one of the best Bordeaux blends and Super Tuscan that I've ever had. They never export. They only make about 500 cases, but it's not to be missed. It's called Podere Forte.
Podere Forte.
Podere Forte, and they're in the Val d'Orcia, which is by Bagno Vignoni, and it's an amazing blend. It's a blend of, which actually is a blend that I'm going to start making this year. Cabernet Franc, Merlot, Petit Verdot. Drinks really well. They do bâtonnage for almost a year. Wine is super elegant. And it's actually, they have a French winemaker who makes the wine. Very impressed with the wine. So every year when I'm in Bagno Vignoni, where I go every year, and to Tuscany in March, I'm pretty much depleting their stock everywhere I go. I'm drinking one or two bottles of that wine at restaurants every day, pretty much. So it's a great one. It's my favorite. I find that it really is the kind of style of wine I like. I like a lot of Super Tuscans. But a lot of Super Tuscans that are very high end that I actually don't like. I don't find them that good. But I do like a lot of Super Tuscans. I know that I was just in Italy and I had Tignanello, which Tignanello, I used to buy it and collect it a long time ago. But I have to say that in some years I don't like it. But if you ever wanted to have a good Tignanello, don't miss the 2015. It was a great vintage in Europe, all across the board. And the 2015 Tignanello was amazing. I think I probably purchased a case or two when I was there, drinking it every day. It was really good.
Do you drink spirits?
Not really.
Okay.
Yeah, sometimes I like a Sambuca at the end. I do make a port here, or a dessert wine.
Very good.
That's a Cabernet, it's fantastic. That's about as close as a spirit as I get. But I'm not much of a spirit guy. I'm really a wine guy.
Got it. So you've now been in the wine world for quite some time, and
This will be my 15th harvest this year, remember?
Yes, wow. So you really fulfilled your dream.
Yep.
That's a really great accomplishment. And
thank you.
Not just in terms of, you know, the amazing growth and the quantitative aspect of it, but qualitatively, you put your heart and soul in it. And it has to be so gratifying to watch it come to fruition and for people to come to the proverbial and actual table and tell you how much they love it.
It makes me very happy when I walk into a restaurant and I look around and there are people enjoying a dark bottle of wine. And it really gives me a lot of satisfaction.
Absolutely. You've observed a lot. I mean, you clearly have this beautiful fusion of romance and practicality. I know that there's an art to what you do and how you think, but you also have been, you know, very hands-on in every single possible way. So from the perspective of the maker, but also from the perspective of a business person, what are your observations about the wine world, and what bothers you, what you think can be improved?
I think one of the things I've observed, Ilona, is many wineries will come out with a great product and have a good run, and then often greed sets in, and mm-hmm. then you start, under the pressure of delivering more wine, you start compromising quality.
Yeah.
And I will never let that happen. And my children, two of them are becoming winemakers. One of them is already a winemaker, one is studying to be a winemaker.
Yeah.
And I've ingrained this in them. You will never compromise quality. That's why I've created the 5-level declassification system. It's not just based on being, you know, subjective, me liking it or not liking it. Of course, the phenolics are based on my palate, but at the end of the day, it's based on phenolics. If the wine doesn't cut it, it's just not gonna go in that program. So, that bothers me when I see wineries do well and then suddenly their quality drops. There are other things that bother me in the wine industry, and if I can be 100% transparent, there are many, many wineries that try to fool the consumer by sweetening their wines and adding all kind of things to the wines to make it sweeter, and adding color and stuff like that, and that does bother me, especially when the wine is being sold for a lot more money. I can't tell you how many cabs I've had that sell for $100, $200 a bottle, and I measure the sugar on them, and they're at 4 or 5 grams per liter of sugar. That bothers me. I'm very much of a purist, especially when it comes to high-end wines. I can understand somebody bending the rule a little bit if you're making an inexpensive wine because you're trying to make the best wine possible for the price. But you start getting over that $20 mark, I think you all owe it to be very, very genuine when it comes to not trying to fool the consumer. That does bother me when I see that. My wines are dry, especially the estate and the reserve wines. They're bone dry.
Mm-hmm.
They're under a gram a liter.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's very important for me, to make wines that are classic, that are dry. It is called dry red wine for reasons. So that's the only thing that bothers me in the business. But I don't make the choices for these wineries. They have to make these choices. And for some, from what I hear, it works. Some consumers do like a lot of sugar in their wines. I mean, I've seen cabs that have 9 grams per liter of sugar. 9.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It's a sad comment. You're an extraordinary communicator and best top brand ambassador Dow Vineyards could ever possibly wish for, maybe only rivaled by your brother. In terms of wine communication, the language that we use, what do you think we could improve upon in terms of really sending the message to both trade and consumer actually accurately and engagingly?
I think there's a lot of subjectivity in the wine business, even when it comes down to the critics. I'm not going to badmouth any critics because, you know, they're very talented, most of them, and they don't deserve to be criticized because, you know, it's a tough job, you know,
yeah.
Tasting hundreds of wines and having to rate a wine. But I think I would like to see science work in conjunction with art.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to critics testing wines. For instance, phenolics is a good example of that. A wine that's got very, very low phenolics is not going to age very well.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see the consumer and the trade get more educated on that. So, for instance, in France, for many years, for a long time, the journalists, when they would write about a wine in a certain vintage, would display phenolics. Because phenolics play such an important role in how the wine is going to age and how aromatic and how, you know, colorful it is, right? Mm-hmm. So I would love to see that. I would love to see the next level of communication to the consumer and to the trade and to the critic, where phenolics play a big part of that. You know, my license plate says phenolics for a reason.
Absolutely. And I know that your facial expression changes when you talk about winemaking. Something happens. Is that your happy place?
Very much so. My happy place is the vineyard, first and foremost. I make wine in the vineyard. And when I'm in the vineyard, my heart is very happy. When I'm making wine, it's also very happy. When around harvest, I'm walking around, I'm smelling the grapes fermenting, I am so happy. And it is my happy place.
If you had the power to stop the world from whatever everybody's doing and just pay attention for a few moments, what would you say?
Wine related or not wine related?
Anything you like. If you have everybody's attention at once.
I think I would love to remind people that all of us one day are not going to be here. And what's going to matter the most is how you love people. And that's very important. I think what you take with you is love. At the end of the day, when we all die, we're all going to be questioned about love, is what I believe. And sometimes people get too entangled with the stress of the day and the politics of the day. They should stop, smell the coffee, and realize we're here for a short period of time. Just love. Don't judge. Love and live your life to the fullest.
What a beautiful sentiment to end the conversation on. Clearly the hallmarks here are authenticity, love, passion, and compassion. And I think that's all we really need.
I would agree.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Luna. Always a pleasure.
Thanks again for tuning in to the official podcast of Palate Exposure featuring Ilona Thompson. We'll see you again next week.